This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's been a busy, busy week, and it's going to be a big show. Special thanks to the president for coming on yesterday. Made so much news, turned it around quickly. And we'll have more of that today. If you didn't hear all of it, we'll bring back some selected cuts of it that apply today because things are moving so quickly. And keep in mind, you could always listen and watch on the Fox News app. Just click on watch and you'll see it. And we stream the whole show. And we also put a lot on YouTube. And we get the podcast wherever you get podcasts. Just put in Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, we're going to be joined by Trey Gowdy, former chairman of the House Oversight Committee, host of Sunday Night in America with Trey Gowdy. And we will be covering all the breaking news. The President of the United States, about 45 minutes ago, without a video, but just with audio, talked to the press. He did not talk on the tarmac or leaving the White House, but did talk to the traveling press to Alaska. We'll give you some of that. But first, Big Three.
Number three.
We spoke about the importance in a moment such as this, where politics is often characterized by a language of darkness. I had to walk through a number of New Yorkers who told me to go back where I came from.
Yes, to some communist country. That's pretty much what you stand for. Socialist communist Zoran Mamdani does not have endorsements for almost any major sitting Democratic leader, but does have a fan in Barack Obama. Yes, they called, his staffers are helping, but why?
Number two.
They must comply. Yesterday, I sent out 33 letters to mayors around this country saying you must comply. We want to know what you're doing to comply with our federal government.
So that is Pam Bondi, his letter to sanctuary cities, because D.C. is no longer a sanctuary city. The president has taken control over it. And he got rid of all the homeless encampments. They are gone. He is cleaning it up over close to 200 arrests. The Dems inadvertently seem to be going to bat for crime. And other states begin to scramble to fix their city before the president comes to town.
Number one.
It's like a chess game. This meeting sets up the second meeting. But there is a 25% chance that this meeting will not be a successful meeting, in which case I will run the country and we have made America great again already in 6 months.
And there's going to be ramifications if Vladimir Putin doesn't come to play ball. Trump-Putin summit in Alaska. It is hours away. The president's on his way. We look at the stakes, the strategy, and what we can expect to happen. Now, nobody knows exactly what will happen, but President Trump just reiterated on the plane that there will be severe sanctions if President Putin does not start with and have a timeline on a ceasefire. And what his goal is, ultimately, a peace deal. And we're going to see how this plays out. So I'll give you this. I'll tell you the format. The format is the president's 5 hours away about, and he's supposed to arrive there first, according to the governor of Alaska, and President Putin will walk up on him. You will see President Trump, I think, walk through fighter jets and let everybody know he's at an air base. So, Elmendorf Air Base, I should say. So that's where he was. That's where he flew out. So once he gets there, they're going to immediately meet. And when they meet, they will meet for a long time, and they're going to go to a expanded meeting at lunch. So it's going to be a working lunch. So first, the president participates in a bilateral at 15:30. So that would be 3:30 in the afternoon. Then they'll participate in an expanded lunch. That'll be, and they gave 2.5 hours for that meeting, and then an expanded lunch should go for another hour. In 3 hours after the lunch begins, the president will participate right now in a scheduled joint press conference with Vladimir Putin. Anytime you're with Putin or a foreign leader, with Vladimir Putin, there's a risk because you don't know if he's going to start spinning and skewing. And you got to be quick on your feet to understand the subtleties that he's trying to get across to make himself look tough and in some way diminish Trump. And just because that's the way he's always done things. Here's what Caroline Leavitt told me yesterday, cut seven.
Did you say they're going to meet and then afterwards there'll be a press conference? And if so, will this be a joint press conference where both sides get to ask Vladimir Putin and President Trump a question?
Yes, that is the plan.
So that's pretty significant because there's going to be Western press, I think, that's going to ask Vladimir Putin questions. Now, here's why I'm getting encouraged that something could happen. I've been in contact with Brett Baer, who's going to talk to President Trump before the meeting. That's scheduled. No, notice that everything changed. So yesterday he was indicating, he says, I'm trying to do a one-on-one with Vladimir Putin, and I haven't gotten a no yet. So then I asked him, coming up to our show, what's the latest? Now, my belief is if he is almost close to saying yes, it means he's got something, something positive to say. Now, Brett says the Russians are interested, working on timing on the ground. He said, I'm optimistic. So look, of course he could say no. But I thought he was going to say no right off. But I'm just going to ask you, and I don't have an answer to this question. We're going to get an answer pretty quick. But if President Putin didn't want something to get done, why is he having the meeting? Counterpoint to that is, well, Brian, he's looking to delay things. For how long? So what? So the 10 days passes where the president says he's going to put sanctions on. But the president said, I'm going to put, if this doesn't work out, I'm hitting you with severe sanctions. So what did you get, a two-day delay? So now you have a scheduled meeting and a joint press conference. The foreign secretary saying nice things. President Putin saying nice things about President Trump going in. I don't remember that before. Do you? So, and do you sit down with Brett Baer, even though it's not confirmed yet? It's not a no. Do you have a scheduled sit down if it's going to be a disaster? And to me, the Russians show up and they still have their same ridiculous demands of Ukraine has to have an immediate election. Ukraine can't have a military. Ukraine's got to give up even land they haven't lost in battle. So all that stuff is just a non-starter. It's a waste of time. But if he says that, they get hit with sanctions. And then why do you sit down with Brett Baer after? You don't. So on MSNBC, anti-Trumpers, speculated on the stakes. Mike Barnicle, John Heilman, Cut 16.
The world will finally see if Donald Trump versus Vladimir Putin up there, whether Donald Trump is just a dressing room fighter, a guy who talks tough all week long, and when he's in a room with Vladimir Putin, he gets nothing out of him.
He has to not get played, because I think there is a high expectation among a lot of people that that Vladimir Putin, the Grand Master, strategic wizard, former KGB, all that stuff is going to walk into this meeting and be able to set Trump up and put him in an awkward position.
I don't know. If it was a general meeting, you could put Trump in an awkward position. But the topic of the meeting is Ukraine. It's not Russian relations. So if it's U.S.-Russian relations and they're talking about an arms deal or a space race, whatever it is, then I would say, well, Trump could lose this battle. But Trump's going to bat to end an Eastern European war that he did not start, that nobody thinks he's responsible for, but he would like to see end. General Jack Keane joined me a short time ago. He'll be joining me Sunday on One Nation. He's all over this, got great contacts with the Pentagon and with the White House. Cut 18.
He recognizes that this is Putin's initiative. He called for the meeting. I think the president is very much aware of what's behind that motivation. It's pretty clear Putin wants to avoid the tariffs and the sanctions. And that's why he wants to have the meeting. And he's going to come into that meeting, as in all of the phone conversations. He doesn't want to lose the relationship he has with the president and the relationship he has with the United States now as a result of it. So he's always going to expand the conversations as he's done in the phone calls. The economic benefits of our relationship, space exploration. Now he's added another one that he's likely going to bring up in terms of diminishing strategic nuclear weapons and potential getting back to a disarmament agreement, which, you know, the Russians have walked away from.
Well, we can't have disarmament negotiations without China because they're now almost an equal nuclear power. And that's where we are, So I'm encouraged that the Russians are coming with their economic team, with their head of international investment. And what we are going with is the headline. We have a big delegation, but Howard Lutnick is going to be there. Scott Bessent is going to be there. And that's important. Those are the ones that will talk sanctions or talk economic reconciliation. But if Vladimir Putin thinks he's just going to say, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do about Ukraine, but let's talk economics and let's talk lifting the sanctions on my oligarchs. And let's talk about establishing some type of economic agreement and relationship. Right now it's at $3 billion, but I don't want them to ever have a pipeline to Western Europe. If he wants to get Nord Stream 3 going, I think that's a no-brainer as a no, but we'll see. There's so much more to do. There's so much more to speculate. There's so much more at stake, but it does remind me so much of sports. In Washington, D.C., the president of the United States moving on all cylinders. He is talking about law and order, especially in the nation's capital. And why would he be doing that? I think the thing that prompted it and sped it up was when his Doge guy that Elon Musk personally mentored, everybody has fun with his nickname, Big Balls, was beaten within an inch of his life, trying to stick up for his girlfriend as they were being carjacked. And he said, that's it. You know, I watched one of my staffers get killed 2 years ago. I wasn't president then. I'm watching running backs on the Redskins get shot on a valet car. I'm seeing Congressman Cuellar of Texas got carjacked. A congresswoman from Minnesota, Democrat, got mugged. And, you know, we're seeing all this, let alone what's going on in the projects in the economically challenged areas. So he has taken over the city. He literally has appointed somebody else as police chief, at least temporarily, as Terry Cole. He is now the new police chief. He is a DEA administrator, but he's in charge of coordinating the police, the park police, as well as National Guard and federal troops to pick up illegals. They're no longer a sanctuary city. This is flat out dynamic. Here is President Trump yesterday with the mayor, about the mayor who's condemning the president as acting authoritarian. I was surprised by the president's response here. Cut 24.
She actually is, but she doesn't want to say it, okay? Because crime in Washington, D.C. is totally out of control, worse than ever. And as you know, they fired or something happened to the person that does the stats because they wanted him in this case, I think, to do stats which were much better in terms of crime. And they were changing crimes to, you know, this kind of a crime, that kind of a crime doesn't get counted anymore and all that.
So you don't believe those stats?
It's actually worse. It's worse now than ever before.
So, and what happened is America First Legal, run by Stephen Miller, is using a FOIA request to find out what went into the composites of these stats that show crime is going down significantly in D.C., because that's not how people feel. And it turns out there already was an issue with the crime. I mean, in Washington, Free Beacon reported on Thursday that former Sergeant Charlotte DeSoy sued the city in 2020, alleging they deliberately downgraded felonies such as theft and assault. They quickly settled with her. They didn't want that story out there. Then this story emerged on Monday. Metropolitan Police Department confirmed that Mike Pulliam was placed on administrative leave in mid-May. Why? Well, Pulliam filed an equal opportunity employee complaint against an assistant chief of the police union, accusing the department of, get this, deliberately falsifying crime data. That's what's going on. The numbers don't look better. You're changing the numbers. So the president says we're pretty much in charge here. The D.C., by the way, this just in, D.C. Attorney General Brian Schwab is suing the Trump administration after the Department of Justice did what I just told you. It did an emergency order to essentially take over the cops, the head of the district police. They are suing, saying this is unlawful. Federal government got jurisdiction under D.C. It's not a state. When in times of emergency, they take control, and the president thinks it's an emergency. And I do, too. And I love the fact that they're picking up these encampments. I love the fact that they're fixing the barriers and getting rid of the graffiti. All that stuff has shown in New York to really matter. Now, for Chuck Schumer, all he knows is defiance. And again, the expletives like a child. Cut 32.
No way. We'll fight him tooth and nail. And right now, as you said, he can only do it for 30 days, or now I guess it's 26 or 27, whatever. And he needs to get Congress to approve it.
The majority would do it, and Chuck Schumer wouldn't have a say in it. That's Senator Chuck Schumer talking about, should they extend the 30 days in which the president can take control? But let me ask you, who is he hurting by getting rid of homeless encampments? Who is he hurting by arresting criminals? People bent out of shape because the police chief's being, I guess we have somebody above the police chief. No one's saying anything bad about her. But obviously the job's not done effective. Now, one of the things I asked the president, I said, by doing what you're doing and all these Democratic cities fear you coming to them, do you think they might be straightening out their act? Do you think they might do it to avoid you coming in? And guess what? I find out this story today. New Mexico's governor declares state of emergency in crime-ridden county. This is Grisham. Governor Grisham announced the sweeping emergency declaration in Rio Arriba County, which includes two Native American communities. The county, which stretches from the city to the Colorado line, has long struggled with opioid overdoses and deaths. So she's taking action. Why? Because New Mexico is a city that has a huge Republican population. And if the president found a way to get in there to straighten it out, he certainly got a predicate to do so. Maryland is upset because they think that if they push crime out of D.C., it's going to go there. Well, guys, straighten out Maryland and straighten out Baltimore. I heard the governor said that the crime's going in the right direction. Shouldn't have a problem. You got a system in place. When we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669, and ride the breaking news. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
What's going to happen next? Is Trump going to federalize the New York City Police Department? What's after that? Chicago, L.A., Miami, Boston, and on and on. What's after that? The NFL, the NBA, you're going to federalize them and take them over? All he wants to do is deflect from his inadequacy by these bold, insane moves. Take over D.C. police. It's not what I need. I don't need this D.C. police to be taken over. I don't. I need to get the tariffs over with. I need to get the war over with. I need to get the Gaza thing over with. And after that, we have something else we have to get over with.
Alec Baldwin weighing in. Remember, he used to weigh in all the time and yell at cops and people. Those were the days. But ever since the after that incident on the set that he loses the director, he shoots her by mistake. He's been a mess. And Alec Baldwin, again, is a joke. But he always has to weigh in as if people need to know what Alec Baldwin's thinking, but I let you know it anyway. And this is a guy who at one point was one of the best-looking men in America. And I say that as a proud heterosexual. And currently, he looks like he's got hit by a truck and then was stayed up all night before and after. I am not sure what happened to him. But he is somebody, it's almost sad at this point. Went from one of the most respected actors, funny guy in SNL, to a guy who has totally lost his sense of humor. And he has snapped since Donald Trump won. Again, he can't figure out what happened to his America. I do. Trey Gowdy has. He's going to be with us next. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Don't move.
Are you feeling more fulfilled now that you're back to work?
No. I need a vacation.
See the movie that critics are saying is an awesome.
Look at that.
Crowd pleasing. Fist pumping. All out brawl of a film.
You're right about that.
They're coming after our family. Go fix this.
Oh my.
Nobody 2. Rated R. Only in theaters now.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The biggest issue right now, and an issue that's really taken hold, is crime. Stopping crime in the cities. And the Democrats are fighting the stopping of crime. So I think that's like men playing in women's sports is okay, or transgender for everybody okay. But this is a bigger issue. This is the biggest of all issues.
And the president's taken action. Now he put his own person in charge of the city. Their city is suing back. The mayor left for Narragansett to pick up her daughter at work, but she's coming back. And now the president's in charge. I mean, you see them taking out the homeless encampments. You see them getting rid of the graffiti on the streets. You see the patrol, the men and women in camouflage throughout the area. And I understand the cops are able to go into the more economically challenged areas of Washington, D.C. And now they're challenging the numbers, the crime numbers. Is it true that all the murders and assaults are all down? Now the America First Legal is making a FOIA request on a lot of this information because there is some accusations flying around. Trey Gowdy used to work in Washington full time. He escaped. He now is the host of Sunday Night in America with Trey Gowdy, but he kept his law degree. And therefore, also, I should mention, too, Sunday at 9 o'clock, but he's got a book coming out shortly called The Color of Death. It's a novel. It's coming out in, I think, in the next 2 weeks. Trey, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. Your thoughts about the fact that the city of Washington, D.C., I should say, District of Columbia, is suing to get control of the police back. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, actually, Brian, Pam was in South Carolina Wednesday and Thursday, so I had a chance to talk to her, Attorney General Pam Bondi. She also brought the new head of the DEA. Look, the District of Columbia belongs to all of us. I mean, this notion they should be a new state, if you really want senators, then you should retrofit yourself back into Maryland or Virginia. But you cannot run the city. Brian, I'm not there that often, but the last time I was there, I was literally going to the Department of Justice. That is a nice section of D.C. And I watched this person pushing, harassing people walking to work, pulling flowers out of a planter, pushing over electric bicycles, basically terrorizing people. Clearly, she had mental health issues. But you should not go through that walking to work. So if Muriel Bowser and the D.C. City Council can't fix it, and clearly they cannot, then public safety is the number one function of government, and the capital belongs to all of us. It does not belong to just the people who happen to live in that zip code.
So what do you think the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore, when he came out and told us on Fox and Friends 2 days ago that he says, yeah, I used to be in the military. The National Guard is not trained to do law enforcement, and they're not allowed to. It's all show. What do you think about that?
Let's assume he's right. What do you think the effect is if you park a cop car outside a nightclub establishment? What do you think happens to crime rate when you do that? What happens when you put even cop cars that don't have cops in it on the highway? People slow down. So what if part of it is perception? I mean, life is perception. These soldiers don't have to do a single thing. They don't have to Mirandize people. They don't have to arrest people. Their mere presence deters the criminal element. So even if that progressive governor of Maryland is correct, I still say do it because it frees the cops up to do what they want to do. They don't have to create the presence. And good luck committing a crime in front of a National Guardsman.
So, by the way, good point. America First Legal is suing to find out what these crime stat numbers really are. Are they being manipulated? Because there is a problem with this guy, Michael Pullian. He was suspended by Quest after questioning, reportedly, his commanding officer recording of stats when it comes to assaults and other things. And now they want his emails and records. They want to find out about the communication. Was there a formal effort to affect the stats? Because anecdotally, things don't seem better, but statistically they do. So what do you think they're going to find there?
Brian, with the possible exception of weight and height, people lie more about crime stats than anything else in the world.
Really?
Maybe possibly their weight might be higher. We had a city in South Carolina that recorded zero DUIs for the year, not a one. Now, do you really think no one in that city drove impaired for an entire year? Or do you think the cops were just lousy at catching them? And the other thing, the game that D.C. plays is their crime stats were at historic highs 2 years ago. So they have no place to go but down. So it is true. Both things can be true. Mm-hmm. Crime numbers are going down, and they're still astronomically high. both of those things can coexist. And guess what? They do in the District of Columbia. So you went from record high homicides, and now you will have slightly fewer, and you want us to pat you on the back?
So, Trey, what's the difference now? He goes into Washington, D.C., and even though he's being sued, it looks like constitutionally he could do what he's doing, right? He puts his own police chief in charge. The DEA director is going to be in charge at least for 30 days, and they're going to start cracking down on the city. They're cleaning up, getting rid of graffiti, small things, and also cracking down on crime. Got it. So let's say he sees, identifies a bad situation in Chicago. Could he move in without the permission of the governor and city and mayor?
Yes, because we have dual sovereigns. We have dual jurisdictions. So, you know, Illinois has its own state crimes, but there are federal crimes that are committed in Illinois. And those would be, you know, Pritzker has nothing to do with that. Those are U.S. attorney's offices, FBI agents, DEA agents. So, politically, I can't wait to hear the argument that cracking down on crime is unfair to criminals. Good luck running for office on that, because crime is actually not a political issue to me. You know who it impacts the worst? You alluded to it in your opening. You and I are not impacted by it. We live in neighborhoods where, first of all, we can move if we wanted to. It is a tax on poor people because they don't have the mobility. And I'm sitting here thinking of this 80-year-old grandmother who has worked her entire life, who goes to bed at night to the sound of gunshots. And you want to run for office telling me that that's just as good as it's going to get for her? So, no, Trump, look, will there be litigation? Of course there will be. Everything is litigated now. But the United States government has certain criminal statutes, kidnappings, carjackings, drugs, RICO, and the president is the chief executive over that. And that includes states like Illinois and even my own state of South Carolina, if he wanted to do it.
So the other big issue legally before we get to the big summit, Trey, is what Gavin Newsom's doing. In an answer to Texas, he says he's going to put a referendum out to allow a suspension of an independent evaluator to district. And he's going to redistrict California and try to squeeze out five more seats because Texas is doing that, and he thinks the president's behind it. Here's the governor with 38% approval rating in California, cut 47.
Here we are in open and plain sight before one vote is cast in the 2026 midterm election. And here he is once again trying to rig the system. He doesn't play by a different set of rules. He doesn't believe in the rules. And as a consequence, we need to disabuse ourselves of the way things have been done.
So the governor thinks he's going to do this. He's going to pass. The stats say it won't pass. The people wanted to have independent. And also, didn't they squeeze out, Trey Gowdy, most of the Republicans?
Yeah, I don't know who's left. This is the same guy that went to the French Laundry during the COVID lockdown.
Yeah, same
right?
guy.
I want to make sure I got the right guy. Okay. And he also was the mayor of San Francisco when they had historically high crime, I think, if we're talking about Gavin Newsom. So I would tell even my independent and left-leaning friends, look at the number, look at the percentage of vote that President Trump got in California, and then juxtapose that with the number of Republicans that are actually representing that state. I mean, there are so many lawmakers that come from California. I mean, I think it's more than like three or other pretty significant states combined. There are a ton of House members that come from California. So what you have to start with is the 2020 census was wrong. It was wrong, Brian. So why would you use wrong numbers? And it unfairly treated red states. There's been much more movement to Texas and to South Carolina and to Florida than there has been to California. So why would you use wrong numbers for a decade? So if you're redistricting to reflect the anomalies of the 2020 census, more power to you. If you're redistricting because, as Gavin Newsom said, he wants to be the end of the Trump presidency, he sounds like Adam Schiff with slightly more hairspray.
I just don't find anything about him trustworthy or promising, but he's clearly running for president with all these with all this grandstanding. So in New York City, a place you try to avoid, I understand that, and more than you understand it, because I come here every day. I'm from Long Island, though, for if everyone's keeping records. You have a Zohran Mamdani, who's got a 20-point lead after winning the Democratic primary, but he does not have endorsements from Hakeem Jeffries, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, almost any of the leaders outside Elizabeth Warren. But it turns out he did get an important phone call and a lot of advice. And the phone call lasted over an hour from Barack Obama. Listen to Mamdani, cut 36.
We spoke about the importance in a moment such as this, where politics is often characterized by a language of darkness. Just yesterday, we had a press conference in Staten Island. I had to walk through a number of New Yorkers who told me to go back where I came from. And I know that those New Yorkers are representative just of themselves. And yet, sadly, that is what politics has become for far too many.
Right. New York City. How about Manhattan? Zohran Mamdani of Uganda birth. So why would Obama pick up the phone call, and call Mamdani when most experts agree he's bad for the Democratic brand? And what Hakeem Jeffries reportedly said, if he gets elected, we will not get back the House. What does Obama see that other Democrats don't? That he's can speak on, he's good on his feet? But what he stands for, to me, is scary to other Democrats, let alone us.
What does Obama see? Himself in the mirror, like Narcissus did. He's just having a hard time exiting stage left.
It's amazing.
He's weighing in on the Texas redistricting. He weighed in on Russiagate. He's coming out of whatever, you know, $500,000 speech cave he's been inside. Look, he was president when he was really young, so it's tough to be irrelevant. But look, Barack Obama led to Donald Trump. You can draw a straight line from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. Mamdani is not Obama. I don't think he has his charisma. I don't think he has his rhetorical skills. But Mamdani is going to hurt the Democrat Party. So my vote is to buy him more airtime so he can continue talking about taxing based on race. How well do you think that goes over in Main Street America?
Yeah, well, it would be easy if white people just would voluntarily give us more money in tax money. That would help the country, so we wouldn't have to mandate it. So, but it is crazy that he's doing this, still has this lead, but I didn't think that Barack Obama would identify him as, and by the way, David Axelrod went and visited their headquarters, Dan Pfeiffer and John Favreau, two staffers for Obama, have been in contact to try to help them. I just don't understand. He's one thing about Mamdani, he tells you what he's about. He's about defunding the police. You know, he's about banning billionaires. He's about taxing the rich more, right out of the city, it seems. So, I mean,
I'm
he's
glad
telling
Obama's
you.
Not calling Roy Cooper, Andy Beshear, some of the red state, you know, Democrat governors. Because that should be the future of the Democrat Party. As long as it's AOC and Gavin Newsom and Mamdani, then Republicans will continue to be a majority party.
So today, and I know you'll be talking about it on Sunday, we'll see where it stands in Alaska in about 5-6 hours. Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump will go behind closed doors, but not talk necessarily about U.S.-Russian relations. They're going to be talking about ending a war the president has nothing to do with except for some degree we're financing and supporting Ukraine. And I wish we were doing more. I'm on the record of saying that over and over again. But having said that, I like where the president's go right now. We're getting drones. They're getting more military equipment, getting Patriot batteries. Europe has stepped up. But this is a grinding war that most everybody wants to see end. Trey, how do you think this plays out?
I had the pleasure of being with the president all day Saturday. We played golf at, you know, obviously 8 before and after, and got to hear him out. He does not like war because it is such a senseless waste of life. That's what he keeps focusing on, the senseless loss of life. And if you don't have life, nothing else really matters. I am thankful. I think Ratcliffe is going on this trip with him. Marco will be there. So he's got really, really skilled people. And I think Trump, there's a difference between understanding someone and liking someone. I think he understands Putin because he's dealt with bullies in the past. But Putin, I don't think, understands Trump because he just launched another offensive against Ukraine. In the past, he's talked about ceasefires and then hit civilian targets. I think Trump's going to say this: look, if you do not agree to a ceasefire, which is number one, then there are going to be sanctions not only on you, but on every country that deals with you. Mm-hmm. And then you come squealing and crawling back to the negotiating table. Russia is a war-loving nation. You look at their history. They love to wage war, even against the Finns. I mean, who wants to fight the Finns? They're wonderful, nice people, except Russia. So can he change that historical mindset? No. Can he say there are going to be serious sanctions if you do not stop your invasion? I don't even call it a war, Brian. It was a Russian invasion of another sovereign country, and they took land. And also, by the way, they took about 20,000 children. So I hope the president says, look, stop the killing, return the kids to their parents, and then Europe, Zelensky, and if you need me, I'll come and we'll negotiate territorial boundaries. But number one, stop the killing.
Trey Gowdy, we're going to make sure to watch your show at 9 o'clock on Sunday, and also pre-order your book. It's called The Color of Death. Comes out August 26th. Thanks so much, Trey. It's going to be an interesting time. Great time to have a weekend show, right? It's a great time to analyze all this.
I love being the lead-in to Brian Kilmeade. That's the name of my show, the lead-in to Brian Kilmeade.
Well, I just want to touch your ratings. That's all that matters. Trey, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Just a quick note, coming up in 8 days, I'm going to be on the stage in Dallas, Texas, on the 23rd. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. Will Cain's supposed to join me. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is going to be there. We're going to celebrate America's 250th birthday, go through all the different steps that we've been through as a country, and also you'll find inspiration, too, in the two sports books I put out, highlight certain people. I think we'll sure to send a message you can actually enjoy, as well as talk about the biggest comeback in political history that we're all living through, and that is Donald Trump. So that's coming your way at BrianKilmeade.com. It's going to be streamed on Fox Nation, and you get specials with Fox Nation by showing up in terms of free months. Every time we do it is a little bit different, and you'll get a preview through their stinger reel of everything that's coming up this fall. All right, Brian Kilmeade Show, keep it here. Don't move.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right. From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. You know, New York tends to be the center of a lot of things, and people always say that, especially if you live in New York. But this mayor's race has made New York a national story with a local story. New York City Councilman Robert Holden, Democrat. More of a moderate. He joins us now with Reality on the Ground. He knows Mondami personally. Does he expect the 33-year-old to be the front runner to be the next mayor? Probably not. Julian Epstein, standing by, served as chief counsel, a longtime Democrat, also on the House Oversight Committee. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We spoke about the importance in a moment such as this, where politics is often characterized by a language of darkness. Yeah. I had to walk through a number of New Yorkers who told me to go back where I came from.
Oh, that's so sad. Socialist communist Zohran Mamdani does not have endorsements from almost any major sitting Democratic leader. But he has a fan in, drum roll please, Barack Obama. What we now know about these two.
Number two.
They must comply. Yesterday, I sent out 33 letters to mayors around this country saying you must comply. We want to know what you're doing to comply with our federal government.
Taking over D.C., president tosses sanctuary city status, tears up homeless encampments, and begins the cleanup while Democrats inadvertently seem to go to bat for crime. I don't get it, but they're suing to get control back of D.C. Who will win?
Number one.
It's like a chess game. This meeting sets up the second meeting. But there is a 25% chance that this meeting will not be a successful meeting, in which case I will run the country and we have made America great again already in 6 months.
So there it is. President of the United States with me yesterday talking about what is at stake in a matter of hours when the Trump-Putin summit takes place in Alaska. We're going to look at the stakes, the strategy, and what I expect to happen. And it looks like they have a big economic contingent to the President Putin's traveling expedition. We have our Treasury Secretary and Commerce Secretary going, and John Radcliffe, Director of the CIA. So they are equipped to answer and do a lot of things and not postpone things. But nothing happens unless there's a ceasefire first and then a security guarantee. Julian Epstein joins us now. Julian, first off, before we get into why President Obama would go out of his way to call Zohram Mamdani, I don't get it. I want to talk about the stakes for this summit. You know, this president's unorthodox. We have to get used to it. Stop criticizing that he breaks protocols and normal mores. What do you expect to happen today?
Well, yeah, breaking protocols. I mean, look what happened with NATO, right? They're at 5% or moving to 5% of spending. I mean, he has defied conventional wisdom on every foreign policy issue, and he's turned out to be proven right and the experts wrong frequently. And look at the number of victories he's had, you know, with Rwanda, Iran, denuking Pakistan, the Thailand, Cambodia, Armenia. So he's on a roll. And I think what a lot of commentators are missing, Brian, is people keep saying, well, if Putin doesn't bend knee, then Trump's going to impose all of this sanctions and it's all of these sticks. I think what Trump is going to be talking about is, look at the carrots, Putin. If you work with us and start to integrate your economy into the West, you can benefit a great deal. And, you know, we can open up trade. We can open up all kinds of economic avenues for you. And I think there's much more appeal to Putin so long as he gets sort of security guarantees on NATO not expanding towards integrating into the Western economy than going towards the nihilism of, you know, the alliance with Iran and China. And I think there's a much greater future for Russia if they try to come west. And I think that's what Trump's thinking about, because Trump's always thinking business. He's always thinking about how can you make yourself a better country. And I think there are many more bright answers for Russia if they look west rather than look east.
Right. I just think it all starts with ceasefire, and then they start with security guarantees,
for sure.
And then anything can happen. Here's what President Trump told me yesterday about the chances of being successful. Cut five.
Is there any scenario where Donald Trump will look at this meeting in Alaska and say, this was not worth it, I failed?
Yeah, 25%.
And you would say that if he just says, hey, I'm going to stay with me
all the time and energy and went over there and we didn't come out with in a short period of time, not from this meeting. This meeting sets up the second meeting. The second meeting is going to be very, very important because that's going to be a meeting where they make a deal. And I don't want to use the word divvy things up, but, you know, to a certain extent, it's not a bad term. OK. But there will be a give and take as to boundaries, lands, et cetera, et cetera.
So that's pretty candid, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look, this is Biden's war. This is a war that occurred because Biden made so many failures and because he was perceived as weak coming out of Afghanistan and sort of minor incursions are okay. And Putin's going into this, I think, with the mindset that can play the long game here. I've got a bigger army and the West will fatigue. So why not just sort of wait these guys out and I can get more land? And I think that's Putin's calculation. And so Trump has a tall order of changing that around. And again, I think it is not just the sanctions. It's not just the sticks that Trump can impose, which is, I would say to my friends on the left, when you want to take away Trump's tariff authority, this is one of the sticks you take away. And trying to get Russia to move in the right direction. But I honestly think that Trump is going to go in there, what has been underreported. And again, as I just said, I think he's going to make the argument to Putin, you gain a lot more by working with us than trying to continually fight us. And if he pulls this off, this is another Nobel. I mean, I think he is entitled to the Nobel on what he did in Iran alone. And if you look at the other peace agreements as well. But again, this is sort of, you know, Trump keeping his own counsel, marching to the beat of his own drummer. And he very well may be, he may very well show the world again that he has sort of, you know, figured out how to unlock the key. He's figured out how to find the key to this lock here and unlock the ruse. And if he pulls this off, this is going to be a major part of his legacy.
Well, put it this way. If they get a ceasefire to a second meeting, that'll be enough, because I'd be pleased with that. If they could say, look, in 1 week or 2 days, we're going to stop fighting. You get Zelensky on a Zoom call, and then you plan a trilateral with Zelensky. That's on the path. If you could just get on the path with a cessation of violence, that would be a huge break. Then, but you got to hope that it stays like that. But the president knows he can't trade. He can't swap Ukraine's land. So there's only so much that could possibly take place. By the way, I'm doing a special tonight between 7 and 9, right after Brett Baer's special. And Brett Baer, by the way, just so you know, Julian, we've been going back and forth. Vladimir Putin has not said no to him. He still hopes to talk to Putin. And the only reason, in my humble opinion, that they would stay on track to talk to Brett, because they know it's the president's favorite channel. The only way they'd stay on track to talk to Brett is that they thought something positive was going to come out of it, in my view. If they plan on giving the president the Heisman, you wouldn't even think about doing a Fox interview after. Do you agree with my reasoning?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think that's a big tell. If Brett gets that interview, it's a big tell. I think if there's a second meeting, to your point, that's a big tell that things are headed in the right direction. By the way, congratulations on your get with Trump yesterday,
thanks,
too. That was a big get for you. No doubt. I mean, I think if there's a second meeting, for sure, and Brett gets the interview, I think it shows you where Putin's head is. And again, this will be miraculous. And I can't imagine that the country in unison would not be cheering Trump's leadership. I think they should be in all these other deals. I mean, what did Biden get accomplished when he was president?
So,
anything comparable? Nothing.
He prided himself on NATO and the relations he had with those leaders, but it wasn't effective. So, by the way, we're talking to Julian Epstein. He's streaming if you're watching us on the app. So Zoran Mamdani, as you know, has about a 20 double figures, is between 14 and 25 point lead to become the next mayor of New York City. But he doesn't have Hakeem Jeffries, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand. Nobody's talking about endorsing him. They meet with him, but they don't endorse him. But it turns out President Obama called him in June and gave him substantial advice. Listen to this. Cut 37.
That call happened soon after the primary. It was a call that I was honored to receive. And the contents of it were focused on the campaign that we ran, the importance of hope in our politics, and the ways in which we govern to deliver on that.
So you get it. He also has the Obama cadence of one word every 10 minutes. But Julian, why would President, seriously, politically, why would President Obama pick up the phone and call him?
We had this conversation in January. I think we are at the end of the Obama era. And I think we are at the nadir, the lowest point of Obama influence as the party sort of deconstructs. And I think Obama, who's always been the way most politicians are, somewhat opportunist, is looking to make himself as relevant as he can with the ascendant wing of the Democratic Party, which is the socialist wing. And I think he does not want to slip into irrelevance. And I think this is his easy way of trying to stay relevant. But, you know, It identifies the problem for Democrats, which is they are going to be asked about Mamdani wherever they go. They cannot escape this. And the brand of Mamdani, you know, is gentry socialism, welfare for the elites. It's the first generation that wants to freeload rather than build. They all come out of this liberation theology, pedagogy that's happening in our universities. You know, cultural Marxism, let's tax whitey. Gender transitions for everyone, and alliance with the closest thing we have to modern day Nazism, which is Hamas. You've seen Mamdani and those around him continually parrot the language and the rhetoric of Hamas and sort of explain away many of their atrocities and ideologies. This is a brand that will kill the Democratic Party.
But Julian, doesn't he know that? Wouldn't you think that Obama just got burned backing Kamala Harris and getting rid of Biden, so he alienates a certain element? He endorses Harris, and Harris loses. So then he's got this socialist, a Bernie Sanders, younger version of an extreme Bernie Sanders, and he says, let me be a part of that momentum. I just think it's his political instincts have never been questioned, and now I'm wondering about that.
I think you're right to question his political instincts, and I think it's the same with the party. What the party leaders know, like Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, is that Mamdani is poison for the national brand, but they don't know what to do about it. So you don't have somebody like a Bill Clinton in the 1990s who can come in and do a sister soldier and say, these guys are nuts.
Yeah.
And so what they try to do is they have it both ways. They try to say, well, I'm not going to come out and endorse you, so I can't have that hung around my neck, but I'm also going to play footsie with you. Well, when you play footsie with socialists and you play footsie with cultural Marxists and you play footsie with, as so much of the socialist left does, with Nazis, you just wind up in a bad place. You know, you keep hearing Democrats call Republicans Nazis. You know, the word Nazi, it means the National Socialist Party of Germany in the 1930s. And socialists have long had a close association with Nazism. I mean, look at Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, and look at the evolution in the last, say, 80 years. And right now, the socialist wing of the Democratic Party is closely aligned with a Nazi movement in the Mideast that's masquerading as a liberation movement. So this is the kind of thing that you see when a party is in decline and it is trying to hold on to support wherever it can find it. You know, a party that's growing is a party that builds. The party's always trying to build new coalitions and new voters. A party that's in decline is a party that is too scared to offend the most extreme elements because it fears that its tent is shrinking and it doesn't want to further shrink it.
So I want you
and
to
that's
hear,
what this shows.
Now, I want you to hear what Hakeem Jeffries said when he was asked the same question on another channel, on CNBC, Cut 43.
You're talking about a free market on one side and being an advocate for a free market on one side, but at the same time, we just had a whole conversation about an individual who is running for mayor in New York City who is genuinely titling themselves a socialist. And you're saying that you might ultimately support them. And so I'm trying to understand the distinction here.
No. I'm trying to understand why you would spend a significant amount of time asking me about the Democratic nominee who's not even the mayor, and it's not a legitimate point to raise about a president who is regularly attacking the free market economy.
So, and he went on. They went back and forth. He got offended that they're bringing up the guy that just beat Cuomo by 20 points, who's a socialist. That's an economic question on a business channel. Pre-think some of this stuff. That's not the way a leader should be acting.
Well, I don't think Hakeem Jeffries is a very effective spokesman. I mean, he speaks in sort of these almost, you know, fifth grade
cliches,
and he can never really answer the substance of a question. He just gives you an epithet. I don't find his answers very substantive or persuasive. I think his days may be numbered as a Democratic leader, as I think Chuck Schumer's is. But again, it highlights my point, Brian, which is that the Democrats are dancing around this question right now. They're dancing around the question.
Run
of the
from
socialist
it or do
left.
It. Yeah, just real quick. Final
but
thought.
They won't confront it. And this is a slow walk to suicide.
Julian Epstein, thanks so much. Have a great weekend, Julian.
Okay, Brian, thanks.
Robert Holden's coming up next. He's going to bring us inside the city politics as a Democrat because it matters. Because there's two more socialist contenders about to take over major cities as well. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
No, I would say I'll have a press conference in either event. If it's a negative, I'll have a press conference to say that the war is going to go on and these people are horribly going to continue to shoot each other and kill each other, and I think it's a disgrace, and I'll head back to Washington, or I'll have a press conference that's positive.
So that is with the president. I mean, the thing is, so many times during the Bush, Clinton, all these eras, I remember working it. Everything's different. Obviously, there was cable was emerging then, and now we have streaming emerging now, and the decrease in the networks and the decrease in the major personalities. I think you have a flattening out of it all. Podcasts really matter. But having said all that, you just will never get another leader to say, I'm going into a summit. It could go really bad. It could go really good. 25% chance it's going to go really bad. But if he's not coming to play, I'm going to hit him with sanctions. And we're going to have lunch, and I'll have a joint press conference, or maybe I won't. I mean, Bush and Clinton, Obama, this stuff would have been all scripted. There would have been very little play, and they were scared to death to ever put Biden side by side with Putin. And no one even probably thought twice about putting Trump next to Putin. You know, there's a theory out there that the president's intimidated by Vladimir Putin. It's just not true. You could believe that, but that's just not true. Well, the president's going to shrink in his presence. That's what I see a lot of people on MSNBC saying. How do you shrink in the presence of a guy who's 5'6" when you're 6'3", and he's all about exerting power?
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't need to do much to make the governor appear extremely dislikable. The intent of that video was to shine a light on what journalists have uncovered over many months, which is the fact of what the former governor did after resigning in disgrace. We know that which has been reported, and yet we also know that there is likely more, because as is the case with Andrew Cuomo, when you think you found out about all of his scandals, there seems to always be another one.
Wow. So I guess somebody's not convinced they run already. They're going for the gloves are off against Governor Cuomo, because they're also running an ad is the Mondani campaign linking him to Jeffrey Epstein, which is a huge reach. I didn't think that it came to that. And right now you have the current mayor in single digits and Curtis Sliwa in third. New York City Councilman Robert Holden joins us now from District 30, a Democrat. And probably I asked Mike Lawler, he says, I knew him in the State House when he was up in Albany. Robert, welcome back. Did you know Zohran Mamdani?
I actually had a press conference and he was there once, and I didn't even know him though. This was last year, and I didn't know him from a hole in the wall. And he still is. He's really a Johnny come lately, snake oil salesman. And I don't know much. Just like New Yorkers, we don't know much about his record. But he's got the rhetoric. He's got the words. He can, like I said, he's a snake charmer. So we should be very afraid of him, because his policies, his speeches, are communist. If you really look at it, free bus rides, free, you know, city-owned grocery stores, full rent freeze for certain low-income units, and an outright seizure of private property. If they don't like the landlords, if government doesn't like the landlords, or they don't like the way they're taking care of the building, let's seize it. That's communism.
Of course, and he's against the financial system. He wants to further tax these horrible rich people, ban billionaires. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of very successful people who say, this is the excuse I need just to get out of New York. Even Governor Hochul knows that's a risk, Robert.
Right. And again, listen, when I hear people who are lifetime New Yorkers saying, if he wins, I'm out of here. I mean, that's like they were looking for an excuse. Some people, because the city was, you know, the quality of life has dropped in the last, since the pandemic, by the way, it's tanked. Quality of life, there's mayhem on the streets of the city of New York. You have just people doing as they please, urinating in public, riding on the sidewalk with e-bikes and motorcycles, people without license plates. So this is what we have currently in New York City. we don't need somebody who's not going to attend to those things, who actually doesn't believe in quality of life. There's a breakdown here, and he's the worst person, this Mamdani, to run the city of New York.
So the thing is, the stats say something different. They say crime is going down. The city's never been better. And, Councilman, we have anecdotally, I know you're right, but are you starting to question all these numbers, just like they're starting to sue to get the real numbers of crime in D.C.? Do you question the numbers that are coming out?
Yeah, and I saw when certainly I see that the numbers have changed. If you look at the 7-8 year breakdown, we used to be way over in crime. All of a sudden, last year, at the end of last year, the numbers changed. So I think they're playing with the numbers. They're reclassifying numbers. So I'm very, very skeptical of those numbers. By the way, New Yorkers have eyes. We see what's going on. And we see that we need to make a change, but we don't need this, you know, somebody on the far, far left. We need somebody like Rudy Giuliani, who I think still was the greatest mayor of the city of New York. And he turned around New York City. Everybody knows that. Anybody that lived here in the 90s and, you know, up to 2001 understands that he did a great, great job in turning around New York City.
Couple of things. Robert, you're a Democrat, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just like, so everyone should know around the country, because we're in 200 plus stations. And this is a national story, because you have a mayor's race in Minneapolis where the current mayor, Democrat, just got beaten by a radical socialist from Somalia. And then you have a female socialist in Seattle just winning by a substantial amount. There'll be a runoff again, but looks to win in Seattle. So this is three straight socialists in their 30s. Who are taking over, could be taking over major cities. And I'm just wondering if you feel my concern.
I feel your concern. There's a reason for this. And I taught college for 40 years. I've seen communists actually as professors, socialists, they call themselves, but they, you know, I've listened to the rhetoric and you know they're communists. And so we're seeing the results now of college students coming out of these universities. And this is what's happening. They're turning to socialism or communism. And it's frightening. And so we really have to get a handle on it. And, you know, listen, I'm seeing things that I never thought I'd see. How could we even consider electing somebody who says globalize the Intifada? How can we actually think about that? Certainly, there's a large Jewish population in New York. But many of them are turning. I think I saw a poll, 40% of Jewish New Yorkers like Mamdani. I don't get it. What's happened to our society? What's happened to New York City?
Well, what's happened, too, is people think it's okay. Well, I'm not against the Jews, but I'm against Netanyahu. They're trying to disseminate the two. And when October 8th, there's protests against Israel after the October 7th attack a couple of years ago, you know there's something going on that's insidious.
Right. Yeah. And again, it's fed by outside forces and big money coming in. And we have to just follow the money. And it would go, I guess, you know, a lot of we hear is coming from communist China. But there's big money coming from all sorts of people that don't like the United States. And that this is what we're seeing.
So we're talking to Robert Holden now, Democratic councilman in New York City. So I want you to hear. Barack Obama picks up the phone and has a lengthy conversation with Mamdani, and he's giving him advice. Dan Pfeiffer, John Favreau, David Axelrod seem to be helping out his campaign. Listen to Mamdani talk about it. Cut 36.
We spoke about the importance in a moment such as this, where politics is often characterized by a language of darkness. Just yesterday, we had a press conference in Staten Island. I had to walk through a number of New Yorkers who told me to go back where I came from. And I know that those New Yorkers are representative just of themselves. And yet, sadly, that is what politics has become for far too many.
And they could have meant Manhattan, so we're not sure what he's talking about. But your thoughts about President Obama putting his prestige on the line?
Yeah, and again, I wasn't a fan of Obama. I'm still not, and this makes it worse. He's got to understand, you know, New York City is the capital of capitalism, right? I mean, everybody knows it. It's Wall Street. If you elect a communist, a full-fledged communist with some radical, ridiculous ideas, and you're an elected official and you're endorsing that, and we have a lot of Democrats in the city of New York that I didn't think would endorse Mamdani, but they are, and they're coming out of the woodwork. And Obama is one of them, but he has, at least among Democrats, he has a good reputation. He can certainly destroy that very quickly.
What was so interesting is if it didn't destroy it, supporting and then casting aside Biden and then supporting Harris, and of course, Harris lost. Yeah. And then when he tries to get Hillary Clinton elected, that was an epic disaster. And then we have all these situations. I don't know how close you follow it, Robert, of what he was really up to in the months after Trump won, to make sure that, and it ends up trying to ensure that, that Trump had a rocky, if not an impeachment-filled 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, this guy, the more you look at it, even though he's got charisma, a handsome guy, fantastic speaker, in terms of substance, he's got, the guy's on a losing streak.
Right. And again, the similarities between Mamdani and Obama are striking. So it's not surprising that Obama's doing this, but this all needs to be investigated, what you just mentioned, and it is being investigated. I hope they continue, and I hope we really look at it and investigate this, and you know, actually bring charges against people who did this. So I'm a Democrat, but people will say, "Well, you sound like a Republican." No, I sound like I'm not aligned with a party. I'm not loyal to a party. I'm loyal to my country. And that's what we should be looking at. And that's why my district is 3-1 Democrat. Yet we could elect, we have elected Republican representatives in the city council. So that's why a lot of Democrats in my district think like me. We go for the candidate. We go for the person, not the party.
So who are you supporting for the mayor?
Curtis Sliwa.
So you got Curtis. Okay, that's interesting.
I've known Curtis for decades. He would come to my civic meetings and he would just motivate a lot of people. He's a New Yorker, in and out. He rides the subways. No other candidate does that. No other candidate knows New York like Curtis Sliwa. So that's why I'm supporting him.
Why do you think Eric Adams is buried in fourth?
Again, Eric Adams, I liked him. You know, I supported him when, he started his term. But he had people from the far left, wokesters, all around him, and he's tried to have it both ways, and you can't do that. You can't, you talk about having, quality of life, but then you don't do anything about it. You complain eventually about the migrants coming to New York, but then in the beginning you were for that, and you were welcoming them. So that's the problem that I see with Adams. It's unfortunate, but he's still a better choice for mayor than Mamdani. We all, even the Cuomo is. And unfortunately, though, New Yorkers seem to be going toward the radicals, which is, again, I'm just perplexed at this point.
Robert Holden with us, New York City Councilman. Before I let you go, you might have an interesting mayor's race. I was texting with Lee Zeldin last night. He thinks that Elise Stefanik's going to get in and she's going to run.
Oh, governor's race.
Governor's race, yeah. I should say.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
In the governor's race, now she's about 14 now. 49% of the people asked do not know who she is right now. So if you are down 14 to a sitting governor and you're a Republican, I mean, do you think she's got a legitimate shot? We know how competent she is.
She's very competent. And again, I would tell her just to keep doing what she's doing and, comment on Hochul, because Hochul's been a disaster. I thought that she's made all the wrong moves. Again, she tries to – I know, by the way, I knew Hochul years ago, and she was – Like me, more toward the right, more conservative, and she's changed. Like many other Democratic politicians, not only in New York but around the country, they're going to the far left, and she's done that, unfortunately. I would tell any Republican trying to be governor of New York, you really have to speak to the people. And not align with party politics, and this is what unfortunately many candidates do. But listen, New Yorkers want a good quality of life, and we seem to be losing it, not only on the city level, but on the state level.
I hear you. And lastly, is this over? I mean, we're not at Labor Day yet. It's a November election. Are we giving Mamdani the win too early?
And that's the problem I have with talking to voters, because everybody says he's going to win and I'm going to move. And I said, let's fight. Let's talk to everyone. Let's get more people to register to vote. Let's bring out the vote. The silent majority is there in New York City. We just have to get them to vote and motivate them. And none of this, down talk that people are, Curtis can't win, or this person can't win, or listen. At this point, there's a crossroads in New York City, and the crossroads really are disastrous if we go with Mamdani. It'll be a disaster, and people will leave, and the money will leave New York City and New York State. So any politician, Democratic politician, that's endorsing Mamdani is going to actually participate in destroying New York City.
I say fundamentally, if someone asks you, are you a capitalist, if the answer is not yes, you're not going to get my vote. His answer is no. And
yes,
that
absolutely
bothers me. Because
of course it should.
So, but I always love talking to you. You give me great hope. New York City Councilman Robert Holden, District 30. Thanks so much, Robert. I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Wake up, America. Wake up. You will not have a country if he rigs this election. You will have a president who will be running for a third term. Mark my word. I wasn't exaggerating when I said that I received in the mail a Trump 2028 hat from one of his biggest supporters. These guys are not screwing around. The rules do not apply to him. The most corrupt president in history.
So it's so funny. People just keep messing with him. And this, he's so desperate for attention to matter. And he doesn't want to focus on what he did in California, talk about a success story, because it hasn't been successful. He doesn't put the effort in. He doesn't show up. He doesn't solve problems. He doesn't set up programs. He's got a green energy program that destroyed the energy sector. His taxes have put his country into deficit and forced major companies to leave. His only recourse is to tax them after they leave, which I think is unconstitutional. At least I hope it is. And now yesterday, he's having a press conference to announce he is going to answer the gerrymandering of Texas with gerrymandering of California. The problem is it's already been gerrymandered to death. Number two, most people in California want an independent council to decide the districts. So you're asking them for a special referendum in November to do this. Special referendum to do this. I don't think it's going to pass. And as Governor Abbott said, right now I'm going to redistrict because I thought the census was off to get 5 or 6 seats. Hey, Newsom, you go redistrict and squeeze out 5 seats. I'm going to put in 10. You could act tough. You could gel your hair. You could sit there and move your hands all around and pretend to play the role of governor and president. But you don't have the material to outmaneuver Trump here. Also, and you know who knows this? Eric Holder, because he tried with Barack Obama to redistrict so much. Florida's got a lot of maneuverability. Indiana's got a lot of maneuverability. I don't know. Maryland's already maxed out. Massachusetts is already maxed out. New York is going to try to put something on the ballot, but that's got an independent council. That's going to be a tough haul, too. So Gavin Newsom's just doing this for grandstanding. He's actually poking the bear, and the bear is Texas. And yeah, you're right. President Trump does not want to lose the midterms, but he's not going to rig the midterms. What he says is, I look at this as an analyst, and I don't understand why I can trounce in Texas and there's so many Democrats there. So I'm going to go try to gerrymander. And he goes, fine. And you know what? All those Democrats said we can't stop them, so I will leave the state. So they can't get a quorum. They're about to get the quorum because more Democrats are coming out. They're about to get the quorum, and they got to have redistrict. And that's game on. So Gavin Newsom, by the way, while he is having his press conference, Gavin Newsom, outside, ICE showed up and arrested a lot of illegal immigrants that were there. They did not know Newsom was on the inside, they say. But I think the Border Patrol, who's doing, did a lot of this. They did the arrest to send a message. You got illegals here. You can't close your border. We closed your border, and we're picking up your illegals. You can say what you want. You can wake up your mayor. But it's happening.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Just moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. It's a historic day, big day, a lot of action happening in D.C., in New York City, as well as in Alaska. And that's just on the just scratching the surface. Dare I say California, where Gavin Newsom's trying to be president and mimicked Donald Trump. When is he going to realize that's never going to work because he's not Donald Trump? Tommy Lehrer in this hour, Shannon Bream standing by. We're also going to do a special tonight between 7 and 9 on the aftermath of the summit that should be done by then. If it's not done, it's probably good news because that means they're getting things done. But there's supposed to be a joint presser after, and somewhere in between I'll be on tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern time until 9. So before we get to Shannon, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We spoke about the importance in a moment such as this where politics is often characterized by a language of darkness. I had to walk through a number of New Yorkers who told me to go back where I came from.
Right. And that would have been recently Uganda and also Manhattan. Socialist communist Zoran Mamdani does not have endorsements from any major, almost any major Democratic leader, but does seem to be getting close to getting one from Barack Obama, who seems to be his guru. Really?
Number two.
They must comply. Yesterday, I sent out 33 letters to mayors around this country saying you must comply. We want to know what you're doing to comply with our federal government.
That is Pam Bondi taking over D.C. President tosses the sanctuary city status, takes over the District of Columbia for at least 30 days, tears up homeless encampments, cleaning up graffiti, arresting criminals. Can you imagine?
Number one.
It's like a chess game. This meeting sets up the second meeting. But there is a 25% chance that this meeting will not be a successful meeting, in which case I will run the country and we have made America great again already in 6 months.
And they'll hit him with sanctions. Trump-Putin summit in Alaska hours away. We look at the stakes, the strategy, and what I expect to happen. And it's going to be big. Shannon Bream will be talking about that on Sunday as anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal correspondent and best-selling author. Shannon, the president's en route to Alaska. He will arrive first, Vladimir Putin second. I did see some reports there'll be a red carpet, and Ooh. It's at a military base, so that's be interesting. Talk to the governor of Alaska. They said that they've been on a breakneck pace to get everything ready. So what do you expect?
I mean, it used to be Russia, so a lot has changed.
1867
in Alaska. Goodness, I think that you listen. You talked to the president. What did he tell you? 25% chance of failure. I think the White House is trying to very much manage expectations, but also letting Putin know. Listen, if there isn't concrete stuff done, that sanctions bill that's sitting in the Senate with more than 80 senators signed on to it, and you can't get anything in D.C. with 80 senators signed on to it, we're going to drop it. And it's not only going to hurt Russia; it goes after big trading partners with them, like India, like China. So, the president feels like he's got some real serious tools in his kit that he can drop on Russia if he doesn't think Putin is legitimately trying to move forward towards peace.
What do you think? Do you think he is? I mean, do you think this is a miscommunication with Steve Witkoff that got us into this meeting to begin with? Or, I mean, that to me is the key meeting. The meeting that Witkoff had last week had him contact the president. He'll be on this trip to say, I think he's ready to change things.
Yeah, so. I've got questions. I'm sure you've interviewed Steve Witkoff many times. He's going to be on with us on Fox News Sunday this Sunday to talk about how we got here and whether Putin is a decent actor. Steve Witkoff has seemed like he does have faith that Putin is actually moving forward in a way that is moving towards positive progress to wrapping this things up. But there are a lot of skeptics who think Putin has just been playing everybody and that he really isn't. You know, the president said, I'm going to know within a couple of minutes, sitting down, looking at him in the eye across from him, whether he's serious or not. And I think there's a lot of pressure on Putin to actually deliver something, whether it's a ceasefire, that promise for a second meeting. Like President Trump said on the plane today, he's not going to negotiate for Ukraine. That's not his position. He's not going to give away anyone's territory, although he thinks, you know, there's probably going to be some territorial swaps or some other conversations about that. But very much acknowledging that nothing gets done without Zelensky at the table. So this is just kind of step one.
Yeah, and there's not going to be any land swaps. What they're going to do is try to get to a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. The more you think about it, ceasefire. And one thing Mark Thiessen warns on and explains effectively is that a partial ceasefire may seem like a partial victory, but it's actually not. It's because they'll pick the thing, they'll pick the area, whether it's no more airstrikes, or they'll say don't hit the Donbass or do hit the. They'll pick areas in which they're strong or weak, and that's what they'll request. So. Mm-hmm. I think that as long as the president is clear that there'll be ramifications if there's no sincerity, and he knows what they're doing. He's already said, I think he's tapping me along. I'm going to hit him with sanction in 10 days. So I actually don't know if there's any pressure on the president except for to hold his line and not do any deals unless a ceasefire is the beginning.
Yeah, and you know Russia's economy has really serious issues, and there are levers that President Trump can pull with respect to that. And you listen, these oligarchs, a lot of them, they're very insulated from some of this stuff. But the more that the Russian economy and the people of Russia are suffering, it undermines Putin. He's had an iron-fisted grip on that country for decades, and so he knows that he's in danger the worst things get for everyday Russians. And there has been pushback, and people who've been brave enough, some of them, to go to the streets to protest what's going on with Ukraine and kind of the international position that Russia now finds itself in. So there is pressure to be exerted, and I do feel that the White House would feel very comfortable walking away if they felt like there was nothing coming together. I mean, to me, I cannot wait for the joint presser. If they don't both show up, then we'll know it didn't go well.
I can't see the president not showing up, but maybe not together would be key. Mm-hmm. So Senator Shaheen is one of the many Democrats who think the president lost already. Cut 13.
Our adversaries are watching what we do. What happens at this summit, what happens with Ukraine, matters to Xi in China as he's thinking about and calculating what he's going to do on Taiwan. What this president has done by setting one red line after another and then allowing Vladimir Putin to cross it has been an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to Donald Trump. It's an embarrassment to the United States.
So your thoughts, Donald Trump should be embarrassed?
Well, listen, he's been criticized for a long time by having this relationship with Putin and for keeping the lines of communication open. He's always argued that that's the only way you can get a real read on Putin and try to have any control or negotiation at all is to stay in communication. It was something that the Biden administration cut off after the invasion of Russia into Ukraine. So President Trump feels like his strategy is the right one. I mean, he's not been afraid to sit down with opposing international leaders that have been pariahs in some point on the world stage. But, you know, to her credit, Senator Shaheen has been favorably disposed to say nice things about President Trump when she thinks he's getting it right. And she clearly disagrees on him about whether this meeting should be happening on U.S. soil or at all.
So, Shannon, I want to tap into your legal knowledge if we can. Does the president have the constitutional leeway to take over the police department and put National Guard troops into action in Washington, D.C.?
Not according to local officials who, as you know, dropped this lawsuit this morning. We thought that was only a matter of time. And we understand now there's going to be an emergency 2 p.m. hearing. And what local officials are asking for at this point is just to put a stay on those orders that the Attorney General Pam Bondi issued yesterday. They say the law does not give the president the authority to do what he's doing. You know, we've got this home rule law here in D.C. since 1973. It outlines the president's emergency powers, how much Congress can extend that. And they say, you know, none of that goes beyond what President Trump is trying to do here. So It's a federal judge in D.C., so odds are they're not going to be favorable to the president's and his team's arguments today. So we'll see if they get to stay on those orders. But there are plenty of people here on the ground. Listen, protests, yes, for sure in D.C., but a lot of regular residents who will say, listen, we've got a crime problem and we should welcome the help.
What about the fact that America First Legal is suing using the Freedom of Information Act to find out who is messing, if anybody, with the crime stats? I mean, there's go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because, you know, the police department reportedly has settled with a former sergeant here in D.C. who said that there was some manipulation of the crime stats and the data. So that was his allegation. I think it was settled out of court. So we're not going to know exactly how the parties came together on that. But the allegations have been there. So maybe this FOIA lawsuit will get us more information about exactly what's going on here in D.C. because we're hearing in recent days, like, hey, crime is down. The stats are down. But again, you always have to compare that to against what? It's a major city. It is the country's capital. It's really the world's capital in a lot of ways. And there are big sections of it that do not feel safe for tourists, for lawmakers, for people who live here.
Have you been to Washington since the crackdown started?
I have. And, you know, we're not far from Union Station, major train station here. That is for all the local commuter trains, but also for Acela and Amtrak that runs up and down the East Coast and all over the country. That's been a place the last few years that you've really, when I come into that station at night from New York, I have security meet me there. I mean, it does not feel like a safe place. So we see a lot more presence there and certainly around the National Mall and places where tourists are going to be, too. Mm-hmm. So the presence is felt, and most people seem appreciative, but certainly not everyone.
So there's a new police chief, and it is the DEA director, it looks like, and there's no more Sanctuary City. So it's a field day now for ICE to go and be able to do their job. So that's pretty encouraging.
Well, not if you're a local official here who doesn't want the feds messing with what you're doing. The thing is, it did seem earlier in the week that local and fed officials were willing to work together on some things, to do a little bit more interactive, you know, work when it came to immigration enforcement, that kind of thing. But that clearly, that vibe is gone now with this lawsuit. So we'll see what it is moving forward. But I won't be surprised if this federal judge in D.C. this afternoon puts the Attorney General Pam Bondi's orders on hold, at least in full or in part. We'll see.
All right. And Shannon, who's on your show?
So we've got Steve Witkoff coming up with us. We've also got Senator Eric Schmidt, and you know him from you know, the GOP side of the aisle. Are they now willing to move forward after this meeting today with those big Russian sanctions? We've also got Jake Sullivan, who is the national security advisor under Biden. How much did Biden policy get us to where we are today with Ukraine and Russia? So questions for him. Who have you got on this weekend?
Well, let me see. We're probably going to leave with Jack Keane to and be live this Saturday. We got Senator Scott Brown. We also have Congressman Jim Jordan, as well as Gary Brecka. And Gary, as you know, is revolution. He's part of the whole MAHA movement.
Yes.
And you probably have seen him on television before and talking with Joe Rogan. So he's going to be joining us now. I wanted to have one guy on with a better build than me.
Well, it's hard to find. I mean, that's a booking challenge for your bookers. When you say, find me this guy, they're like, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger's not available this weekend.
Yeah, I'm now actually in better shape than him. But Scott Brown's also a triathlete, so I'm really lying. So Gary
Brecker's there going to be swimming on your show or just biking and running?
I got to look at the rundown again. There might be swimming. I'm not sure because I got to be different than Fox News Sunday.
Right, exactly. And we don't do Speedos, but you can.
Right. That's the only way I swim. Shannon Bream, thanks so much.
See you this weekend.
Should be exciting. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to be back with some phone calls I see out there in Binghamton. Actually, all the calls are from New York. Don't move.
Illuminating. Intriguing. Inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I probably don't have to tell you that President Trump has his critics. Maybe one's Tom Cruise, who decided not, he said he had a scheduling conflict, to accept his Kennedy Award. Tommy Lahren's here. She's host of Outkick's. Tommy Lahren is fearless. You might listen to her anytime she's on Outkick, and she's all over the channel. Tommy, welcome back.
Good to be here.
You're going to be an outnumber, too.
I am.
So in terms of critics, this is what I was building up to, because the audio is not great. I felt as though we should introduce it. Alec Baldwin's talking again. So it turns out he's not for the D.C. crackdown. Let's watch.
What's going to happen next? Is Trump going to federalize the New York City Police Department? What's after that? Chicago, L.A., Miami, Boston, and on and on. What's after that? The NFL, the NBA, you're going to federalize them and take them over? All he wants to do is deflect from his inadequacy by these bold, insane moves. Take over D.C. police. It's not what I need. I don't need this D.C. police to be taken over. I don't. I need to get the tariffs over with. I need to get the war over with. I need to get the Gaza thing over with. And after that, we have something else we have to get over.
So your thoughts, Tommy, about the touchstone.
What a clown. Also, the NBA last
person, NFL?
The last person that should be speaking out about any type of violence or safety or security, given his history, is Alec Baldwin. You think that man would have crawled under a rock and just taken a 5-year hiatus from anything after his scandals. But no, he's got a reality show on TLC to promote, Brian, and I think that's what mostly this is about.
By the way, he happened to be, and as a proud heterosexual male, one of the most attractive men in his 30s and 40s. He looks like he's been through hell and back.
Well, he has. He has. But
right.
I love it when these Hollywood types, I love it when they talk about President Trump and the derangement that they have, because it only proves how out of touch they are and their party is with everyday Americans. The things that he's saying, why does they want to go to D.C. and then Boston and New York? Yeah, actually, the people that are scared there would love it if President Trump would come there and make it better. But that's how out of touch they are. They have private security. They live in gated communities. And they're poo-pooing people who care about their safety and security, who actually live in these communities.
You know, the most egregious example has to be Senator Schumer when he comes out and says, I walk every day, when he's surrounded by Secret Service. Yeah. And he acts like we can relate to that. That's why he has invisible friends and a 34% approval rating. But the president has changed the culture, and Hollywood's benefiting. Big story in the New York Times over the weekend, and I'm fascinated by it. Do you know, with the absence of DEI and the pushback of political correctness and the jeans commercial, people are standing up, and now you can put attractive women into movies and commercials again. And get this, white people can actually get jobs again, all because Trump's pushing back at the DEI that ruined their industry.
Right.
And they started it, but they're benefiting from Trump pushing back on it while not supporting him.
Right. But they'll still grandstand at all the award ceremonies and talk about how they need DEI and they need all these things. And the loudest ones that are...
Do you think they will do that still?
Yes, they cannot help themselves. And it's the ones that are doing it are the whitest, most liberal ones, if you notice. I mean, that's really who's leading the cry for this. But they will never stand down and they will never say, well, you know what, I'm going to give up my role or I'm going to give up my paycheck to a person of color who's transgender and a refugee. I've never seen that happen.
You know what's interesting? If you're a producer or a director, and let's say you're way to the left, but you have a key grip that you always can count on, a script writer, a runner, you know, big jobs, small jobs. You go, yeah, I need an Indian. I need a transsexual. I need a black person. I need a white person. So they're filling gaps with ethnicities instead of the people that they're comfortable with, that they know that can do jobs, or they're not eligible for funding or awards. And they are going, what did we do to ourselves?
Well, as more movies flop, I think you're going to see that go away. And it's partly because President Trump is making it okay to have things based on merit again. But that doesn't really, Hollywood isn't really touched by what President Trump does. They live in such a bubble there, I know, because I used to be in L.A. That is just such a different world. But what does speak to them is money. And I don't know about you, but I love going to the movies. I cannot find a decent movie in theaters. They just don't exist. They all suck.
Here's the thing. This is what I hear. Naked Gun 2 is good. They said it could bring back comedies. Yeah, Eric and Pete, did you see it, Naked Gun?
Not the remake, only the original.
Believe it or not, I'm hearing great things about Naked Gun 2.
Liam Neeson, Pam Anderson. Yeah, I've heard good things as well.
So it could be the comeback of the comedy. We used to have comedies that were funny.
And comedy, I think, has been okay. But if you're trying to go to a serious movie or a thriller, that's what I love to go see in the movie theater. You had Top Gun. And then after that,
Spider-Man,
I would be...
I don't know.
And then they had Superman, was based on the immigrant story.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, I think it's pretty sick and pathetic. And it should set everything you need to know, the setting that we're under. That they chose the time, manner, and place to send their district director outside right when we're about to have this press conference. It should set everything you know about Donald Trump's America. And that was top down. You know that for a fact. And they'll deny it, I'm sure. Maybe they won't deny it. Said everything you know about the authoritarian tendencies of the President of the United States.
That is Governor Newsom pretending as if it's just him and Donald Trump. Only he can save the country from Donald Trump when he has done such a terrible job in California. And now he wants to put a referendum out to redistrict. And he had a presser yesterday. But Tommy Lahren, who's getting set to host Outnumbered shortly, Tommy, at the presser outside, they say unrelated. Border Patrol was in action. Are making some illegal immigrant arrests. You think it was related?
Well, here's the deal. In Los Angeles, you can swing a dead cat and hit an illegal immigrant. So it's a target-rich environment. So as they said this morning on America's Newsroom, we can go anywhere in L.A. and we're probably going to find an illegal alien. And not only that, we're probably going to find a criminal illegal alien. So their thing was, hey, listen, there was somebody in the area. Whether it is or is not, I think it's an excellent troll by the president. I mean, listen, if you're going to hold this rally and you're launching your presidential campaign, let's be honest, that's what this all was, then we're going to send CBP. And I think that it was an excellent move, and I'm all for it. And I love to see Gavin get his undies in a twist.
All right. Here is what was happening outside the event that Gavin Newsom was hosting, Cut 51.
You know, the governor's inside right there.
I don't know where he's at.
Do you have he's about 100 feet behind us. Do you have any comment from him or anything?
Again,
any message?
We're making Los Angeles and California a safer place. We're going to continue to do that, and they can take that one to the bank and cash it.
And they can cash it. And I tell you what, that is the Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino. So it wasn't ICE, it was the Border Patrol, which has really sealed the border, despite what California wanted them to do. And now they're chasing down the illegal immigrants. And Mayor Bass and Governor Newsom think they got the public on their side.
Yeah, because they're speaking to a small crowd in L.A. that's cheering for them. I watched the video, and they want to make it look like they had a packed crowd. More people show up to light Waymos on fire and wave Mexican flags than show up to a Gavin Newsom rally and
right.
a Karen Bass rally, okay? So they think they've got this sizable push. They're in Los Angeles, in one of the bluest places in the country, and that's their crowd, and they're touting this as some kind of, you know, a national wave of excitement for what they're doing. I don't think so. Gavin Newsom, again, is hard launching his 2028 campaign, and he's using anything and everything to be anti-Trump because it's about Gavin. I mean, if he comes up with another podcast in the next month, that'd be number three in the last 2 years.
Have they approached you about doing his podcast?
They won't have me. They said, oh, not right now.
Not right now.
I said, please,
but
I would love to.
You wanted to do it, right?
Well, you know, he wanted to talk to conservatives. Remember, that was the whole pitch of the thing, this is Gavin, but that didn't last too long. But they won't have me. So we'll see.
So tell me, what do you think is going to happen today? Everyone's got an educated guess about how this plays out. What do you think? I'm talking about Alaska.
Yes. I think President Trump just having the conversation is an important step. And I think he's doing it to gauge the intentions. And I think that no matter what, it's a positive step forward. But what we really need to talk about, Brian, is something more important. And it's the fact that your family has a new dog.
Oh, yes.
And we must talk about it. And we must show the photos.
Are you a dog fan?
I, of course. I'm an all animals fan. But I think we have photos. I've been told we have photos and video of your new dog. But we don't know the name yet. So we got to break some news.
All right. So we're going to go with Bear.
Okay.
Bear joins Willow, who is a 120-pound Great Pyrenees. But Bear is a couple of things we got to work on. Bear, in his early years, which is not one yet, but 12 weeks, has not been in a crate. And has not been confined. So the first time we put him in a crate, he thought we were putting her in prison. Not for it. And then even putting a playpen area to bracket it out, that was a bit of an adjustment. So this is our fifth puppy. This is the biggest surprise. But the dog, I've never seen a dog just lay out as if he was shot. When he goes to lay on the ground, all the paws go flat out and he just collapses. And so far, the older dog does not like the younger dog.
Really? That'll change.
I think so.
How old is Willow?
Willow's 3.
Okay, so that's not very old.
Right.
That's still a pretty young dog.
And the thing is, too, it's one of those things where as soon as you get the dog, you go, oh, my goodness, now you cannot leave the house for too long. Now you got to make sure to go back. Now at the end of the night, you got to make sure to put her on the AstroTurf in order to go. So there's a little bit of lifestyle change.
Yes. You're becoming a new parent.
Again. To a dog. A little bit more responsive. But we'll see. I will bring Willow in, but it should be on a Friday when you can be here. Right?
I would love to.
Right.
I would love to have all the dogs. I think we should have a dog day anyway. I've been pushing this for years. Why do we not have a dog day? I have 2 dogs.
You
yes.
do? Really? Mm-hmm. What kind of dogs?
I have my little rescue chihuahua, who's an old grumpy lady. And then my husband, who's now my dog, our joint dog, but he's gone 8 months a year playing baseball, coaching baseball. So it's become both of my dogs. But he's a golden doodle, a fancy.
So right now, who's watching the dog?
Well, right now I have a Rover, which is, if you haven't heard of Rover, you need to use it. It's like Uber for your dogs. You have a trusted sitter. They come pick the dog up. They drop the dogs back off. They send you photos. They show them sleeping and eating and all these things. It's great.
I've never heard of this.
You need Rover. It's an app. Go get it. You can find all the verified sitters on there. Pick your sitter. I use the same few ones every time.
Tommy, do you don't know these people? You do know them?
Well, you get to know them. You got to do a little meet and greet. You can't just trust anyone
gonna be
with
in
your
apartment.
Dogs. Well, yeah. I have them go to their house. They come pick my dogs up, take them to their house, and they send me photos and all this. So you got to vet these people, of course. But, yeah, I have like a few trusted ones that I oscillate between based on their availability. It's a great invention.
You always seem to be a step ahead.
Well, you got to get on the apps, you know?
Right.
It's like these Rover apps, it's like a dating app, but for your dog. And you can go and you can search. For me, I'm like, okay, the one with the green hair probably is not going to like me very much. I've had Rovers ghost me when they realize who I am, by the way.
Oh,
they'll
really?
Come meet the dogs. They love the dogs. They look at me and they're like, and I never hear from them again.
Well, do you have people that only want to deal with you too? Don't you have super fans as well?
Sure. Well, I don't know if they're super fans. They like me. They're like-minded. It's Tennessee, right?
Right.
But they don't outwardly tell me that. But the ones that don't like me, when they just stop responding to me, I'll be like, are you good? Oh, good for Thursday. And no response. Like, well, that was a liberal.
I mean, you've put up with so much but you go into these markets that don't embrace you like New York and California. But this studio, you're safe. And Tommy, lastly, what is with the Mets? You have a family member with the Mets.
Yeah.
And they've lost 13 of 15. This was a team that was up by about 4. After coming off a tremendous season last year.
So here's a couple things need to happen. They've got some great talent in AAA that they should utilize on the coaching side. Oh, just a premonition I have. Okay. But also, last year, the key was Grimace. Remember the McDonald's character? Grimace came, the purple thing, and then they were on a hot streak. They need to bring a McDonald's character back.
Just bring back any McDonald's
character. A Hamburglar, any of them. I don't know. Well, whatever one it takes. And bring them back, give them a seat, and they'll get hot again.
Tommy Lahren, thanks so much. We're going to watch you on Outnumbered, and we pick you up on Outkick. And were you going to be on anything else this weekend?
Nope, that'll do it. I'll be back in Nashville.
All right, back in Nashville. Tommy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So we are back, and by the way, we got a special coming up tonight at 7 p.m. to 9, meaning tonight, Friday night, on News Channel. We're waiting for the President of the United States and the summit in Alaska. He's en route. He's going to be there in a couple of hours. Our special programming starts at 3 o'clock. Then there's going to be a special edition of The 5, then Special Report, which is going to have an interview with President Trump. It also might have an interview with Vladimir Putin. I just texted Brett. They are asking for logistics, so... And that to me is encouraging, because if you're the Russians and you expect this thing to go bad or you don't care, you wouldn't set up an interview with Fox after a Trump summit. It just wouldn't be logical, but we are talking about Eastern Europe. And of course, we have One Nation coming up Sunday at 10 o'clock Eastern time, and we'll be live, especially reviewing what's happening in Russia. We got Gary Brecka coming on. He's one of the mainstays of MAHA, the MAHA movement. And then we also have Senator Scott Brown, and we also have Congressman Jim Jordan, who's a former wrestler, and General Jack Keane, so it's going to be big. With me right now in studio is Rich Big Daddy Salgado and Angelica Stenelson, who together are doing something really special, co-producing the Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic, for it goes to a great cause, Tunnel to Towers, who's a big sponsor here as well. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
All right, so you've been doing this every year.
Yeah.
But this year, you were really pumped up for this. And what kind of partners have Tunnel to Towers been?
They've been outstanding. I mean, you know, when people ask me all the time, why them? When they tell the story, when Frank Siller tells the story, yeah, it just runs through your whole body. And, you know, he's
of
a
9/11.
Hero. Yeah, he's a hero. Steven Siller, his brother, is even a bigger hero. And why not? It's New York.
Angelica, what has it been like producing this?
Incredible. Listen, there's no I or me. There's we. There's always the team behind us. And it's been incredible. I mean, we've done it, him and I, for the last 4 years just by ourselves, literally. But now we've got an amazing team, T2T team, that supports us fully. Right. And we just found out that Steven's son is going to be joining us at the event. So we're beyond thrilled.
Yeah, who always goes to the Patriot Awards. So some of the celebrities are going to be showing up.
Strahan, Tuck, Jillian Carter-Alley.
Jeff Hoffman, the former founder of Priceline.
Jimmy Failla, you forgot Jimmy. Isn't Jimmy Failla?
I was about to say Jimmy Failla.
I mean, my goodness. How did you not lead?
Yeah, exactly. I should have led with him. Like back in the old days when I used to lead with Hammer.
Right. What happened to Hammer? He's not golfing? He's away.
He's in Turkey or somewhere. Yeah, he told me he was away.
But, all right. So who else is going to be out there?
Oh, man. We've got Kevin Carter, CBS, you know, college sports.
Sure.
Who else?
Eric Coleman?
Yeah, Eric Coleman. We got Tony Richardson.
Marvin Washington.
We've got Frank Siller himself is going to be there.
Jillian Carterelli, the country singer.
Yeah, Don Voltaggio, the CEO and founder of Arizona Iced Tea, is going to be there.
Who's a big sports guy now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't have any problems with celebrities or foursomes. The foursomes are all sold out.
So if people want to give to Tunnel to Towers or be a part of it and they can't get out to the tournament, or they can, your foursomes are sold out, right?
The foursomes are sold out, but the evening gala is still, the tickets available at bigdaddygolf.t2t.org.
All right, to see the event.
Where's
it going to be?
Ohika Castle, our signature venue.
It's at Ohika Castle, the dinner part, the gala, but the golf is going to be at Pine Hollow in East Norwich.
All right. Tell me one thing. Your job has changed so dramatically. You're one of the sports marketing titans, the kind of sports management titans too. We're watching college football go pro before our eyes. Now, you played college football. You probably deserve to be paid, right?
Yeah,
University
sure.
of Maryland.
Yep.
But what we're seeing now, I think I'm seeing AAA football, right? I mean, this is the under 21 professional league.
Ready? I am insuring more college kids than I ever had in the last 3 years.
So these kids, if they get hurt, their future's done, and they're paying premiums now.
They're out of their own pocket. You know, the show's not long enough for us to get into the whole spiel, but these guys, they don't realize that when they get handed a boatload of money, you know, let's say it's $100,000, 50 of that Uncle Sam's taking, you know? And then the first thing guys need to do is get an accountant. You got to get an accountant in play because they're not used to having that kind of money. But now I'm getting guys that are writing their own checks. And now the other thing, when I was at a visit with a school, is the school insuring the player, because if he gets hurt, they get to make up the money that they gave the player.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So insuring the player. Okay, got
it. Yeah.
I mean, I understand the model is broken when you just say scholarship and there's 110,000 people in the stands. And after 4 years of taking 12 credits, you don't have a degree. And then you're on your own. So I understand that formula doesn't work for a lot of people. Yeah. And I understand, too, you're not going to go only 2% go pro. So this is their moment. But is this the haves and haves nots of football, too, and basketball?
Yeah. St. John's, right down the street from us. They're their budget is like, you know, let's say talk about golf outings. Patino's golf outing used to be like, you know, $4,000 for a group. It's up to $25,000, and they moved it out to the Hamptons.
St. John's. Right.
So something, you know, you got to give or take. Where's that, you know, and the reason they're doing that, they need the NIL money.
Name, image, and likeness on top of what they have to pay players now of a minimum, correct?
Yeah.
Offensive linemen get a certain amount.
Yeah.
So, but if I want you, and I'm at the University of Georgia, and you're at Alabama, can I go up to you and say, listen, go to the portal, I'll meet you there? Is that allowed? Do you
know?
Yeah,
they're doing it. They're doing it. I know one kid, without naming a name, who's gotten $3 million from a school, $1 million for a shoe deal, and $500,000 for a trading card deal.
And is this a great
player? And he hasn't even slept on campus yet.
You know, it's so interesting. The Mannings say that Arch will not be coming out. He needs two more years. But he would be the guy that teams tank for.
Oh, he'll be the first overall pick.
Is he as good as they say? They say he's got the arm strength with his grandfather's wheels.
I haven't seen him play, so I can't judge or comment on it. But I know that everybody thinks he's the next coming.
Right. All right, so the Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic is coming up. It's coming up August 18th. There's a sponsorship opportunity available. It goes to Tunnel to Towers, who's a big sponsor here. And I know, I also know that Mr. Siller is a great fan of yours, so to put it together. But when you walk up to putting this golf tournament together, isn't that the Tunnel to Towers, isn't that also an organization machine?
Without a doubt. By the way, I just want to say something that I always say. We're more than just a golf outing. We're all about heart. We're all about star power. We're all about giving back.
Right.
That's
which
what
where the money
to.
Goes.
93% of all money raised goes directly to charity, which is most of it. I think they've been rated as one of the best charities for the last 10 years. And it's a lot of work. Again, we have an amazing team. We're very proud of where we are today and what we've done with the Classic.
Right.
It's been tremendous work and support. From Long Islanders, very close friends.
Well, listen, Brian and Ainsley graciously have been donating in the past and, you know, for experiences and whatnot. And we left out one important clock, one name we forgot.
Who?
Todd Pyro.
Oh, yeah.
He's
going to
be out there.
Are you kidding? Todd Pyro?
Todd Pyro. Right,
can you get a confirmation on this? Because I do not, Pete. Would you be able to call him and get him on the line?
Because we'll call him up in about 2 minutes.
If you don't mind. That would be great. So now Todd Pyro, he's going to be great. He'll be a little tired because he's up at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, yep. Cheryl Casson, too. She's coming, too.
From the Fox Business Channel.
She's
an unbelievable athlete marathoner.
Oh, man. I see her running all the time. I'm like, well, I hope she can hit a ball like the way she runs.
Now, in years past, you've had Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Will he be coming?
No, not this year.
He must be a terrible golfer.
He didn't even golf. He just rode around and, you know, shook hands and kissed babies.
Which is more important.
Yes, exactly, because everyone wants his picture or handshake.
Your roommate in college?
Neil O'Donnell will be there.
Will he be there?
Yes, he'll be there.
Quarterback for the Steelers,
yes,
but most importantly, the Jets.
Yes, he'll be there.
All right. Please tell me, the Giants will be better this year.
From your lips to God's ears, yes.
That's all I needed to hear. They've added a lot of talent. Check out the Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic. It's for a great cause. Tunnel to Towers, a big sponsor here. Coming up on the 18th, go online and contribute. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
See you tonight at 7. And don't forget, Sunday at 10, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.